So we're in the middle of a series called Life Redefined, and we are picking the brain, if you will. We are unwrapping the Sermon on the Mount, at least part of it. And the part in the middle that I really believe Jesus is zooming in on our worldview. We've talked about that, right? What our worldview is, how we look at this planet, how we look at the craziness that's going on in our world. Anyone else? No? Okay, my world is crazy. My world is upside down. My world is backwards, forward. What used to be right is wrong, and what I thought was wrong is now right. And, you know, just everything is just, it's nuts. What do I do with that? And the other part of the worldview that Jesus gives us, not only does it help us look through a lens and say, okay, I may not like it, but I understand what is happening. I understand what God is doing. The other part of it is, what about me? Because I'm living, this is not just theoretical. I'm living in this world. I'm living in the same world that you're living in. I'm dealing with the same things that you're dealing with. What's my place here? What's going on and what's my place? How do I understand what's happening? And so we've been unwrapping that. And in your notes, if you look in your bulletin, there's a half sheet of paper. On one side, if you're a parent, look on one side and you'll see that there's some instructions, some information about what our kids are learning right now. So if you have kids in the treehouse or in the budge, you can, this afternoon or this week, you can go, hey, I don't know what the popular name is, Joey, Bobby, I don't know, Curtis, there you go. Hey, Curtis, hey, Kurt, little Curtie, you know, what did you learn today? And you as a parent, you will so impress your kids because you will be able to talk intelligently and they'll be so impressed, like, wow. Mom, Dad, you know about that? You know about that story? You know about how God did that? Oh, yes, I do. Thank you. Yes. And you can just be used by God to reinforce what is being taught to your kids. Isn't that good? Yes. Now, come on. He's listening. Isn't that good? Okay, good. The other side of it is not so important, but some notes about what we're talking about this morning. You'll see at the top of your notes, there is kind of a review of what ground we've covered. In this idea of life redefined, making eternal decisions in a temporary world. The text that we're going to look at this morning, we're still in chapter 5 of Matthew. Jesus continues on a theme that is woven through this whole worldview, and it's the idea of truth. And if you'll join me there in verse 33, we see this phrase that we learned, we'll hear him and see him say 6 times over this center section of the Sermon on the Mount. Again, you have heard that it was said to our ancestors, you must not break your oath, but you must keep your oaths to the Lord. But I tell you, don't take an oath at all. Don't take an oath by heaven, either by heaven, because it is God's throne, or take an oath by the earth, because it is his footstool, or take an oath by Jerusalem, because it is the city of the great king. Neither should you swear, take an oath, same word, by your head. This is just cruel of Jesus for us middle-aged men. This is just cruel. You shouldn't make an oath by your head because you cannot make a single hair remain in place. Oh, wait, no, that's not what it says. You cannot make a single hair white or black. You don't have any control over that. Don't swear, don't take an oath by your head, because you cannot make a single hair white or black. But let your word, yes, be yes. Let the word that comes out of your mouth, yes, when you speak yes, let it be yes. And when you say no, and your no, be no. Now listen to this. Anything more, anything beyond this, anything more than this is from the evil one. Will you just agree with me this morning that we live in a time where what comes out of people's mouths almost has zero value out there, excluding us? I mean, God just provided, you know, the perfect illustration. We are in the middle of a presidential campaign. Enough said? All right, enough said. Okay. Let me ask us, reflect back, it's 10:29, reflect back over the 45 minutes that you've been up, for some of you, or the 2 or 3 hours that you've been up, if you're moms, you've been up for 6 hours, you know, whatever amount of time, how many words have come out of your mouth? Now, don't respond out loud. I just want you to think, how many words have come out of your mouth? It's almost impossible to calculate it, right? Let's make it maybe a little easier. What words have you said? Ooh, that's kind of tough too, right? Come on. That's kind of tough to, okay, what did I say? What did I say to my wife when she asked me this morning? Or when, in my case, she said, where's my coffee? You know, and I went, oh, you know, what did I don't remember what I said to her. What have I said this morning? What's come out of my mouth? Here's the last question. Can I, with certainty and confidence, say that all the words that I've spoken this morning that have come out of my mouth were true? Perhaps, I think I heard someone say. See, what Jesus is speaking about here, what he's challenging us with, part of the worldview that we're to have as we look at our planet, our crazy planet, and what is happening and my place in it, is that the words that come out of my mouth need to be the truth. They need to be true. Now, he's speaking to an audience there that he uses an illustration that they would understand. He says, you know, he takes them back, and you know what, we'll go there in just a minute. But he takes them back to a couple of passages in their law, and he says, you've heard it said that you should keep the oaths that you make. Let me just bring it to contemporary times. You need to do what you say you're going to do. You need to keep your promises. We don't typically use the word oath. You know, on my mother's grave, my mother's actually alive, so that doesn't work for me. But, you know, sometimes we'll see things. We don't do that a whole lot, right? When you're at work and your boss says, okay, I want you to make sure you do this and have it done by 3 o'clock. On my mother's grave, I promise it'll have it done by... You know, we don't speak in oaths, particularly. We do a version of this. We'll talk about that in a minute. What Jesus is saying is what comes out of our mouth needs to be true. Now, there's a couple of thoughts that I want you to really grab a hold of. They're in your notes. And the first one is this. In a world of broken promises, would you agree that we live in a world of broken promises? Come on. Government, relationships, financial institutions, on almost every level, we live in a world of broken promises. Here's what I believe Jesus' worldview for his followers is this. In spite of living in a world of broken promises, although that's all around us, the follower of Jesus Christ, the one who's going to follow Jesus, live as his disciple, regardless of the circumstances, in a world of broken promises, we are to be promise keepers. That if we make a promise, we're going to keep it. Now, we've all been guilty, I've been guilty of making promises and not keeping them. Sometimes I make promises without thinking. I learned at some point with my kids to stop saying, I promise. Okay, we're going to go to Disneyland next year, you know, in April or whatever. And really, I promise you we're going to go. And then something would happen, circumstances would happen, but Dad, you promised. Oh, you're right. You know, I sometimes would make promises without really thinking it through. We do that in different ways, but I've been guilty of making promises that I haven't kept. On a more serious level, more weighty level, I've made promises. I have said things. And what Jesus is describing here is I kind of want to play games with that. Well, did I really promise you? I don't know if I really made a promise. I kind of just said this or I said that. And that's the picture here of people saying, you know, this is how I said it. And if I say it this way, then it carries weight and it'll be kept. And if I say it this way, then I have an out and it's not, you know, you can't hold me to it. Jesus is telling us in a world of broken promises, the world he lived in was a world of broken promises, just like it is today, that his children, his followers, are not to be like everyone else. They are, in fact, to be promise keepers. You make a promise and you keep it. Now he explains this, he lays out this picture. He says, you've heard it said that you must not break your oath, but you must keep your oath to the Lord. Is that true? Yes, it is. He's not discounting that. He's not saying that that's wrong. But then he goes on to say, you know what? I tell you, here's what I tell you, don't take an oath at all, either by heaven or by earth or by Jerusalem or even your own head. Now, here's the simple principle. None of those things belong to you. None of those things you have any control over, so you have no right to use those to add weight to your promises. Go back with me to the Old Testament. Let's look at the passages that he was referring to so we can understand his heart here. Numbers chapter 30. Anybody remember where Numbers is at? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. Numbers. Numbers chapter 30. Numbers chapter 30, just the first two verses. Moses told the leaders of the Israelite tribes, this is what the Lord has commanded. Who? The Lord. This is what Jehovah has commanded. When a man makes a vow to the Lord, when a man says he's going to do something for God, communicates it to God, or he swears an oath to put himself under an obligation, what is this? This is a promise. It's not by heaven I swear, or by earth, or the things that Jesus is telling us not to do. It's just a straightforward promise, words that come out of a mouth that are a reflection of the heart. When a man says, I'm going to do this, what is God's expectation? That he does it. Now, the word obligation should communicate that to us, right? He puts himself under an obligation. Obligation of what? To do what he said. He must not break his word. He must do whatever he has promised. See, God's not, Jesus in human form there in Matthew was not saying it's wrong to make promises. What he's saying is you play these games and you try to add weight to your words. And why do we do that? Why do we need to try to convince someone that we're serious? No, I really mean it this time. I promise that I won't do that again. We're trying to convince someone that we're actually, this time, going to do what we say we're going to do. Because for whatever reason, we have a reputation or in that particular relationship, we're not known for keeping our word. Jesus takes us back to Numbers 30 and the command of God that when you say you're going to do something, we should simply do it. You do it. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 23. Just one book over. Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 21. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, do not be, I love this, do not be slow to keep it. Let me translate that so we can understand it. Stop making excuses. Stop making excuses. Well, but my circumstances have changed. My world has changed. My resources have changed. My thinking has changed. I feel differently. It's impossible. Nobody would, I was really rash when I made that promise. I should have thought it through. My favorite, I didn't know what I was getting into 30-something years ago. Just let it sink in. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, do not be slow. Don't make excuses in putting off to keep it, because he, who's he? God will require it of you. He will hold you to it. He will expect you to keep your word, and it will be counted against you as, wow, as sin. You know what the sin is? Yeah, you've lied. That's how God looks at the words that come out of my mouth. He doesn't stipulate in what situation. He doesn't narrow it down to certain relationships. He doesn't say, okay, if you've really thought it through, if you have all the facts and all these things and you've prayed about it at least for 4 days, then I'm going to hold you to that prompt. I don't know why I'm dancing. You know, I'm going to hold you to that. Sorry. I distract myself, so I'm sure I distract you. He just says, if you make it, if you say it, you do it. If you make a promise, you keep that promise. God holds us to it. Words matter. The words that come out of my mouth matter. If you refrain from making a vow, it won't be counted against you, a sin. Be careful to do whatever comes from, I love this, listen to this. Be careful to do whatever comes from your lips. Oh, my wife can hold me to that promise that I was going to do this on a certain day. Does she not understand that the Giants are being, their game is actually on TV this Saturday? Surely she understands that that voids out what was previously. Right? I have an out, right? Whatever comes out of your lips, you must do what you say you're going to do. Be careful to do whatever comes from your lips, because you have freely vowed what you promised to the Lord your God. God takes seriously what comes out of our mouth. If there's any, maybe this is it. This is not in the notes, and I just popped into my head. Maybe this is the real lesson. This is the real principle of the worldview that we need to take away from, is that, you know, we just really need to think about what we're saying. That what comes out of my mouth, God takes seriously. Maybe my problem, maybe our problem is just that. Maybe we've bought into the craziness of the world around us, and we've given ourselves all kinds of excuses and outs that it's not that big a deal what I said. But church, that's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying it really is a big deal what comes out. In whatever aspect of life, whatever relationship, he doesn't restrict it. I'm thinking of husbands and wives to each other. Oh man, do we just say things and then, oh, I'll clean it up later? What about parents to kids? We're tired, we're busy, we're distracted. Oh, come on, stay real with me. Don't all be looking at me and judging me like you are right now. Or at work, or over the fence to our neighbor, or on the phone with that company that our package never arrived. And we're trying to get that package re-delivered. You following me? Well, if I just say, if I just do, in a world of broken promises, that's reality, guys. That's where we live. That's where we live. We live in a culture. We live in a world of broken promises. Jesus says, and he can't say it any clearer than this, let your yes mean yes. When you say yes, you mean it. When you say no, you mean it. What comes out of your mouth need to be promises that you keep. In a world of broken promises, keep your promises. Keep your word. You never make a promise you don't intend to keep. Never let a circumstance or use a circumstance as an excuse to not do what you said you would do. I thought of this week. I think we've lost sight of this. And I say that because I had a grandfather who was old school grandpa, full blood Swede, immigrated over here to Colorado, and he died quite a while ago, but he was alive my whole life growing up into a young adult. And he was that old school guy that just, you know, stuck his hand out and shook your hand. I needed to borrow money for Bible school. Before there was student loans, there was grandpa, you know, and I went to grandpa and I said, I need some money, you know, would you help me? And he said, yes. And I said, okay, well, what do you want? You know, like piece of paper, and he stuck his hand out and he says, do you promise to pay me back? And I said, yeah, you know, of course, you know, I shook his hand and he broke my fingers, you know, he squeezed it because in his world, when you gave your word, you kept it, because he thought like this: you are your word and your word is you. They're inseparable. Now we've made that disconnect, right? We like to not have accountability for what comes out of my mouth. Take a look around. Take a look in the mirror. Jesus says, no, not for my children, not for my followers, not for my disciples. Your yes needs to be yes and your no needs to be no. In a world of broken promises, be a promise keeper. Now, why does this matter so much to God? Here's all we have to know to understand this. John chapter 14, Jesus said, I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. The way to God, the truth, and life are inseparable. They're all interconnected. You don't have any of them if you don't have all three of them. Jesus himself is the living word, a reflection of the written word. He is the truth. This is why God cares so much about what comes out of my mouth. Because guess who I am? I'm a child of God. I am a disciple of Jesus. I am a temple of the Holy Spirit. I'm his. I'm in his family. Every word that comes out of my mouth reflects directly on who? Yeah, on him, on my heavenly Father. He cares about every word that comes out of my mouth, out of your mouth. Let your yes be yes, your no be no. In a world of broken promises, be a promise keeper. A promise keeper. It's interesting, the illustration that he gives here in the day that he is speaking this. There's a group of people, the Pharisees, that, and there were some other Sadducees and some zealots and some other people, this Sanhedrin council, but there was a religious hierarchy. There was a group of people, and above them, socially or civically, was Rome. And we know how truthful Rome was. But these religious leaders, these people that were had a lot of influence in the lives of his audience, who he was speaking to, had become experts at playing with the truth. Does that ring a bell at all to you? Does that sound familiar at all to you? Yeah. You know, if I hear one more athlete get up in front of a microphone and make a non-apology apology, I'm going to pull what's left. I'm going to pull it out. It's like, you know, this, you know, that's so irritating. That's one of my pet peeves is, you know, somebody gets caught, they're a mess, there's a scandal, and their PR person says, okay, you need to have a press conference, you need to get out there. And we've become experts at making non-apology apologies, not taking any accountability or any responsibility at all for what I did or what I said, but I have apologized. We've become experts at playing with the truth. The Pharisees had become experts at playing with the truth. In fact, Matthew 23, if you'll join me there just for a minute, Matthew 23, Jesus directly takes this on with the Pharisees. And the chapter 23, I don't know how many of you are doing the Matthew reading challenge. We're reading a chapter of Matthew each day of the month, and we're doing it 12 times with a different focus. If you go to the blog, there's a link on our church website, or you can go to sacredhunger.org, and you can get there. And you'll see the May challenge is up there, because today is May 1st. So if you're taking if you're doing the Matthew challenge today, this morning, or sometime today, you will read chapter 1, because today is, you guys are so smart. And so we just go through it. Last month, April, was questions. We were looking for questions that Jesus asked. I went through and I found all the questions. I made a little chart. I'm going to hand it out later in the year, give it to you. It's pretty cool. And I don't know how many of you did that. This month, we're looking for what Jesus said about himself. Who he was, his mission, why was he here? What are the clues that he gives us? And so we're just keep going back through Matthew. And when you come to chapter 23 of Matthew, he really takes on the Pharisees, this group of religious leaders, the religious institution of his day. He doesn't hold back. He really goes after him. We're not going to read the whole chapter, but just a couple of verses, starting in verse 16, because he takes on this idea of what you speak, the promises you make head on. He says, "Woe to you, blind guides." Well, there goes political correctness. "Woe to you, you're blind as a bat. You blind guides who say, whoever takes an oath by the sanctuary, the place of worship, the house of worship, it means nothing. You can get out of it. It's like you crossed your fingers behind your back. But whoever takes an oath by the gold of the sanctuary, now you're bound by the oath and you have to do what you said." So be careful how you make your promise. Jesus says, "Blind fools, for which is greater, the gold or the sanctuary that sanctified the gold? The place of worship where we come to worship God. Also, you say, whoever takes an oath by the altar, the place that we come and we bring our gifts to God, we bring our sacrifices to him, that sacred place. If you make a vow, if you make a promise by the altar in the temple, I promise, it means nothing. You can get out of it. But whoever takes an oath by the gift, that is what you bring, how big it is, how special it is, that is, that case, the person is bound by their oath. Blind people, man, you just don't see this. Which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Therefore, the one who takes an oath by the altar takes an oath by it and everything on it. The one who takes an oath or makes a promise by the sanctuary takes an oath, makes a promise by it, and by him, Jehovah, who dwells in it. And the one who takes an oath by heaven takes an oath by God's throne and by him who sits on it. What's he saying? He's saying, you guys are just playing these games. These religious leaders are playing games with the truth, and they're teaching it to other people. Here's the tough truth, guys. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. We have religious institutions. We have religion now more than we've maybe ever had before in multiple forms. And what's happening right now in this very moment in our very part of the world, in our country, in our state, in our city, that is causing just incredible confusion by those who are wanting to live by the truth and know the truth. The voice of religion today is playing with the truth. And if you're listening to the religious leaders and those who claim to speak for God in the name of religion, in the name of faith, in the name of these systems, you're going to find that what Jesus told to the religious leaders of that day applies exactly to the religious leaders of our day today. It's not just our government. It's not just our culture that's saying is right is wrong and upside down is down and backwards is now forward. It's coming from religious voices in our culture that are saying, oh, yeah, that's how we used to think, and now we got it this way, and, you know, this is the truth, this is what's right. This is what it looks like to follow Jesus, to follow God, or to know God, or have a relationship with a God. And what happens when you play with the truth, and you say this, then you say that, then you say this, then you say that, what happens is what's coming out of your mouth now is just a bunch of, you fill in the word, okay? Bunch of junk. See, what we say matters. The truth matters. God expects me as his child to keep the promises that I make. Even in the world, a world of broken promises, I am to be a promise keeper. Wives, would you amen there? No? Okay, remember he's listening. In a world of broken promises, as a husband who's made a promise to a woman to be faithful to her, to love her, to serve her faithfully, truthfully, until one of us is no longer on this planet. Wives, is that something that you want to see men do? To keep the promise that they've made. It goes both directions, right? Ladies, it applies to you as well. But in a world of broken promises, God expects us to be promise keepers. Here's the other thoughts in your notes. Do they all just kind of blend together here? In a world filled with deception, we're called to be voices of truth. And this is, you guys, where we are really facing a head-on challenge right now. Because we live in a culture where the very definition of truth is being played with. Seriously. It's being played with. What if it even exists, and if it does exist, here's what it looks like. And we're learning, and we're growing, and we're progressive, and we have nice words that we use, and science is teaching us things that we never knew before, and popular opinion is telling us things and helping us understand things that we never understood before, and you know we are so far ahead and advanced of any other culture, any other time in human history. That's what we're being told. That's what we are. That's the new truth, if you will. You know what that means for the followers of Jesus? It means that it's going to be tougher and tougher and tougher and maybe more costly to be voices of truth. You with me? Now, Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life, is speaking to a culture that is going to embrace him. They're going to embrace his message. They're going to love him. They're going to throw palm branches in front of his little, you know, Fiat 500 or whatever it is he's riding on, and you know his little Mini Cooper. And you know they're going to Hosanna, and they're just going to love him, and they're going to follow him all the way up the hill to where he's executed. Why? Because the words that came out of his mouth were the truth. That's what he was guilty of. I've come to show you the Father. I've come to fulfill the Father's plan. I'm just here to give you the message of redemption. I'm here because I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through me. Some of us were at a conference this weekend where that idea was talked about, that there's one way. See, Jesus' crime was he spoke the truth. In a world of deception, and if you say, well, I'm not sure it was a world of deception, read the rest of Matthew 23. Just read that whole chapter. And you will get from the mouth of Jesus, you'll get a summary of what the condition was in that day based on the leaders of that day. And it was a world of deceit. It was a world of deception. And in the midst of a world of deception, just as Jesus did, we are called to be voices of truth. We are called to speak the truth in love. And it starts, I believe this with all of my heart, with the deepest conviction. So, well, you know, I don't know what that looks like, and my neighbor and my workplace, and I'm going to speak the truth. Here's where I believe it roots back to and where it begins. It begins with the conviction that every word that comes out of my mouth needs to be true. That's the bar that Jesus sets. So if I'm thinking, okay, I want to witness to my friends. I always want to testify to who Jesus is. I want to speak the truth in a world that's just filled with deception and false ideas, and people every single day are going to their death, lost in the dark without the truth. Wow, that's significant. I'm called to be his witness. I'm called to give testimony to that. I'm at school. I'm at work, in my family, wherever. Okay, I want to do that. I want to. Then take a few steps back and start with this. Let your yes be yes, and let your no be no. Let the words that come out of your mouth be the truth. In a world of broken promises, be a promise keeper. In a world of deception, be a voice of truth. How do I be an effective, fruitful witness for Jesus, speaking this incredible truth of what the cross means and who Jesus is and why he came and what he did for us? How can I speak that and yet in my relationships with my family, my wife, my kids, my friends, break promises and say things that are not true? No, I can't. Jesus says, guys, let your yes be yes. Let your no be no. We don't need to back our words with an oath. We don't need to back our words with games or some kind of evidence to try to give them weight. You know what we need to back our words with? Our character. Just who we are as followers of Jesus. In a world of broken promises, keep your promises. In a world that is filled with deception on every level, you're gonna be touched by it everywhere you go. As a follower of Jesus, be a voice of truth. And it starts with every word that comes out of my mouth. The question is, are we there? Are we willing to pay the price? Are we willing to start there and be people of truth? That every word that comes out of my mouth, that's how I'm going to live. In 1904, there was a young man named William Borden. He graduated from high school at 16 in Chicago in 1904. Borden, his family, was an incredibly wealthy family in Chicago. By today's standards, with inflation, they're billionaires. They were billionaires. And as a graduation gift, his father gave him a trip around the world, 16 years old. Isn't that crazy? 16 years old, and they gave him a trip, and so he traveled around the world, and he saw all kinds of stuff. He went through Europe, and he went through Asia, and as he traveled, God began to just work in his heart and began to place a burden in his heart to do something with his life, that would take the truth to people that didn't have the truth. And he wanted to give his life to that. Well, when he came home, he talked to a couple of friends, and he talked to his parents, and his dad particularly, along with one of his good friends, his dad particularly was not at all pleased. The dad's plans was, you're going to follow in our footsteps, you're going to, you know, work in the business, you're going to, you know, live this life that we've earned, this all, you know, everything is provided, and just this life of luxury. And William or Bill, he just said, Dad, I think God has other plans for me. And there was a tension there between him and his dad. And in his Bible, around that time, in his Bible, he just wrote two words on the back page. There was this blank page, as a lot of us have on the back, and he just wrote the word, two words, no reserves. No reserves. So he goes off to school. He goes to this college called Yale. There were 1,300 students at the time in 1905 at Yale. And so he gets there, and he begins to experience college, and he sees the spiritual condition of students and the professors and what's happening at Yale. And in that day, Yale was, in fact, a school to train people, pastors, to be in ministry. That was their primary purpose. And he saw the spiritual condition of what was going on, and so he and his roommate began to pray. And pretty soon a third guy joined and a fourth. And over a period of time, there were 150 students that were, during his freshman year, they were praying with him. Out of the 1,300, that's pretty awesome. But William's heart was burdened for the students and the professors, and he just continued to live his life in such a way that was drawing people to this gathering of prayer. And by the time he was a senior, he had 1,000 students of those 1,300 students were gathering together in prayer. And so he graduated from Yale, and he went to Princeton for seminary. And again, his dad was, you know, hoping to point him in the right direction. And his heart was just continually convicted by God that he would go somewhere in the world. And he hadn't really heard clearly from God, but he was aware of this Muslim group of people in China, the Kansu. And that's what just began to fill his heart. And as he was going through the end of Yale and into Princeton, he just had this conviction. And, you know, I think this is where God wants me to go. I'm not sure, but I really believe this is the direction that God is leading me. I want to take the truth to these people. I want to serve these people with the truth of who Jesus is. And as it became close to his graduation, it became clear what God wanted him to do. And he communicated with his dad that he was going to live his life as a missionary. Well, his dad was absolutely displeased with his decision. And he said, well, and he didn't say it this calmly, he said, that's it. You'll never work in this company. You'll never have a job here. Don't expect anything from us. You're on your own. And they disown him. And about that time, he goes to the back of his Bible and he writes two more words. He writes, no retreat. No reserves, no retreat. So he graduates and he embarks on his journey. He's headed for China. But so that he can learn about culture and language and the people that he's going to be serving, he goes to Egypt to get some further training. And he's just in Egypt a short amount of time, just a few weeks. And he contracts spinal meningitis and he dies. Never makes it to China. Never makes it to the group of people that God had laid on his heart to go. After his body was returned home and services and all that had taken place, somebody found his Bible. And in very shaky language or handwriting, there were two more words that were added to the back page of his Bible. No reserves, no retreat, and no regrets. No regrets. That, I believe, is what our heart needs to be and our mind needs to be when it comes to being people of truth. People of truth in a world that is filled with broken promises, in a world that is just going to continue to be flooded with deception. We know the author of that deception, don't we? He showed up in Genesis chapter 3, and the first words out of his mouth were deception. And he's doing the same thing today. What Jesus is calling us to do, my worldview needs to be this: no reserves, no retreat, and no regrets. My yes will be yes, and my no will be no. My mouth, everything that comes out of my mouth, will be the truth. May it be so by the grace of God. This morning, we're going to gather around the Lord's table. Dawn's going to come and lead us. If you want to be reminded of the truth, here it is.